The Indonesian government might want to revisit that arrangement now. The European Union was on the verge of a trade deal with Trump. It may hesitate to ratify it. Hakeem Jeffries, the Democrats' leader in the House, wrote on X that the Supreme Court's decision is, quote, another crushing defeat for the wannabe king. Trump should have seen this one coming. 64% of Americans dislike his tariff policy. Few people have been persuaded by the Trumpian argument that tariffs are paid for by foreigners. Not even the Supreme Court's conservative majority, which has gone along with so many elements of Trump's power grab, could accept that a president's weaponization of tariffs may bypass congressional authority under the law. Trump's Republican cronies in Congress had better pay attention, since Trump clearly will not. I don't have to work with Congress, says Trump. I have the right to do tariffs. Spoken like a wannabe king. I'm Mel Gertow for the Global Citizen. Thanks for listening.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News for Tuesday, February 24, 2026. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-801-1378. Our production team for tonight's newscast includes Mel Gertov. The producer is Althea Billings, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Isabel Charlet, Simone Perez, Antonia Gonzalez, Danielle Smith, Catherine Carley, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Eric Leuschner. All of our KBOO programs, including the Evening News, are supported by our members. If you would like to become a member and support our programming, you can go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321. Stay tuned now for KBOO News in Depth.
KBOO News in Depth, where we take a deeper look at the top news stories impacting our community.
You're listening to KBOO News in Depth. I'm Althea Billings. The Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices, or ACIP, was scheduled to meet on Wednesday, but the meeting has now been pushed off until March 18th. The committee hadn't posted their agenda on the CDC website, meaning they couldn't legally meet. When the committee does get together next month, they're expected to make several recommendations on seasonal vaccines, including flu, RSV, and COVID-19. ACIP members have already expressed concerns about COVID-19 vaccines, particularly the single-dose mRNA vaccine, claiming it's dangerous and should be taken off the market. In June of last year, Health and Human Services Secretary Robert Kennedy fired all the existing members of ACIP. Many of the new members are vaccine skeptics. And over the past year, the ACIP panel has issued several controversial recommendations, particularly on the measles, mumps, rubella, and varicella, the MMRV vaccine. They eliminated the Hep B vaccine at birth and tightened eligibility for the COVID-19 vaccine. ACIP Chair Kirk Milhone stated in January that the polio vaccine should not be mandatory. The committee's recommendations come amid a rise in vaccine-preventable illnesses, including measles, which was declared eliminated at the start of this century. Vaccine skepticism has also dramatically risen in the U.S. Roughly 1 in 6 parents, about 16%, have skipped or delayed a recommended vaccine. That's according to a 2025 poll released from KFF and The Washington Post. American Community Media has been following this story and spoke with Dr. Richard Besser. Besser is the CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and former acting director of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. Besser spoke to American Community Media on Friday.
I am Dr. Rich Besser. I'm president and CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. I've been in this role for almost 9 years. As you heard, I am a pediatrician, and I practiced general pediatrics for more than 30 years. All the time that I've been working in public health. I've also been a pediatrician working in federally qualified health centers, so community clinics. The time I spent at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, I started as a disease detective. I worked for many years as an epidemiologist. And at the end of my career there, I ran emergency preparedness and response for 4 years, and then was the acting director at the start of the swine flu pandemic in 2009. The foundation that I now lead is focused on a future in America where health is no longer a privilege for some, it's a right for all. And that's a bold vision. We are nowhere near seeing that vision be a reality in America. And I have grave concerns that over the past year, we've been moving in the wrong direction. And you know, part of that is tied to vaccines and what we're talking about today. But more fundamentally, we see an administration that no longer sees the role of government as providing the opportunity for health for all. And so we're seeing access to healthcare more broadly be limited. At the end of this year, millions of people who've had access to Medicaid will be losing that access. And it's very hard to live your healthiest life if you don't have access to high quality, comprehensive, affordable healthcare. But the topic that we're focusing on today is vaccines. And during my 30 plus years of pediatrics, I can say without a doubt, there was nothing that I did that had more proven value in terms of protecting and maintaining the health of my patients than helping to ensure that they were vaccinated fully and on time. And you know, that involves developing relationships with parents, being open to hearing concerns and questions and addressing those questions. And it was a lot easier than the times we're in now. A lot of mistrust in healthcare, in public health, developed during the response to the COVID pandemic. And it's hard for me to see the path towards restoring the trust that was damaged. But in that exam room with a child and a mom or a dad or a grandparent, whoever was providing care, that was a setting where there was trust and needs to be trust, so that a parent can ask their questions about the safety of a vaccine, why it's being given, why it's being given at a certain age, so that there can be a level of comfort. The challenge now is that we have, as our Secretary of Health, one of the nation's leading anti-vaccine advocates. Secretary Kennedy, before he was Secretary of Health, he founded one of the organizations that is really challenging the concept that vaccines are safe and effective. It flies in the face of science. It flies in the face of fact, but having someone in that critical role has damaged people's trust in vaccination in ways that we're seeing play out around the country. You can see in South Carolina the massive measles outbreak that's taking place. You know, we saw it start last year in Texas, but it's not limited to those states. Viruses don't respect the borders of states. They don't care what political party you align yourself with. If you are not vaccinated, or if the vaccine happened to not work for you, measles will find you and measles will infect you. It is a really good marker for how well or poorly a community or a country is vaccinating. And the meeting that was canceled for next week is the meeting of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices. That committee has played a very important role in public health in America. There, you know, typically that committee has been made up with some of the nation's leading experts in infectious diseases, in vaccines, in population health. in issues of health disparity and health equity. And they have reviewed the scientific evidence around each vaccine and have made recommendations. And when I was practicing pediatrics, I would look to see each year what the CDC recommended in terms of flu vaccine, in terms of COVID vaccines, in terms of the basic vaccines for children. And it is absolutely heartbreaking to me, having worked at the CDC for 13 years with dedicated employees, to have to say, I do not recommend looking to the CDC for information around vaccines. The committee that was there was disbanded by the secretary, and the current committee is loaded with anti-vaccine zealots. Not every person, but for someone to come onto that committee who has no expertise in vaccines and public health, in how to understand the science of these infectious diseases, does not put them in a position to be able to provide the recommendations for the nation. So what we're seeing are other bodies step up. The American Academy of Pediatrics, I'm a member of that organization. They put out recommendations. They used to be the almost identical recommendations to the CDC. They're not anymore, but I recommend that doctors follow those recommendations. Parents who want to know more about vaccines, vaccine safety and effectiveness, should look to the Academy of Pediatrics for that kind of information. I would not recommend looking at the CDC website. It is now full of misinformation and disinformation. The meeting was canceled for next week. It's not exactly clear why. The Academy of Pediatrics and other medical organizations filed a lawsuit against the federal government, saying that the guidance that had been put out by the ACIP was illegitimate guidance. It wasn't based on the best evidence. We filed an amicus brief to support that lawsuit, as did a number of others. And part of that lawsuit was calling on the meeting for next week to be canceled. They didn't attribute the cancellation to that lawsuit. It may have more to do with the political climate, where people in both parties overwhelmingly believe that vaccination is the best way to protect the health of our communities. I think it probably has more to do with that and the political climate that we're in. But I think it is a good thing that the meeting was put on hold, because the meetings over the past year have done incredible harm to the health of our nation.
Besser acknowledges that it can be difficult to sift through the noise, especially for parents who are feeling unsure.
What I say is, I don't recommend taking your medical advice from politicians. my advice is, if you're fortunate enough to have a medical provider who you know and trust, ask them what you should do. It's really challenging to sort out through all the noise that's going on. One of the challenges, however, though, is that not everybody has a doctor. And the number of people who have a doctor is actually declining. So we're going to see issues of health disparities based on that and that alone. You know, what the ACIP did was it moved a number of vaccines from a category of being recommended for all children to a category that they call shared decision making. I find that strange, because every decision I made with a family was shared decision making. Right. So I think that's at the start. Everyone should feel that their health is something that they have control over, and any decision with a healthcare provider should involve shared decision making. But, you know, talk to your doctor or your child's doctor, your nurse, your pharmacist, someone who you know and you trust, who is not tied up in the political noise that's going on. And you have a right to have your questions answered. And so if someone is saying that, you know, you should just do X, Y, or Z and doesn't want to answer your questions, I wouldn't view that as a very trustworthy provider. As we all know, you don't get that many minutes in the exam room with your doctor. And the confusion that is swirling around vaccines and vaccine information is more than can be handled in a routine pediatric well-child visit. You don't want to spend your whole visit talking about vaccines. Something that was taken for granted, had been well-studied, were safe, were effective. You want to talk about child development. You want to talk about nutrition. You want to talk about all the things that parents come in wanting to know about. And what I worry is that more and more parents are going to say, you know what, this is just too confusing for me. I think I'm just going to hold off for now. And when that happens, a lot of children end up falling behind and are not vaccinated against diseases that may do some real harm.
Besser worked at the CDC for 13 years and says he never experienced political influence over his work, but that's not the case now.
I was only acting director for about 6 months, but I was at the agency for 13 years. And I was there during Republican and Democratic administrations. And I never saw an attempt by political appointees to influence the vaccine recommendations. The federal advisory committee system is designed to ensure that political influence is limited and constrained when it comes to the advice provided to the government. These are supposed to be independent bodies of experts who are providing information. It's a separate question in terms of, are the recommendations accepted? Because the recommendations of the committee are recommendations to the director of CDC, and then the CDC director can either accept or not those recommendations. During my time at CDC, I cannot recall a single instance where the CDC director did not accept the recommendations of the committee and see those go forward. But it is set up so that political appointee could do that. The 4 years I spent running emergency preparedness and response, I started on the day Katrina hit New Orleans. And then I transitioned to be acting director when President Obama was elected. There was never a concern that the approach to public health was going to change based on political party. This was something where the entire nation was unified around the importance of protecting our communities and the health through the public health approach. What we're seeing now was absolutely unthinkable.
Besser says the COVID-19 pandemic did have a big impact on how people feel about vaccines.
It's challenging. There were a lot of challenges with COVID-19. I ran emergency preparedness and response at CDC for 4 years, and at the start of the swine flu pandemic. And during that pandemic, we had a very aggressive communication approach. So, we made sure that the public heard directly from us at CDC multiple times a day. And we shared what we knew, what we didn't know, and what we were doing to get answers. And we said up front that many of the things that we recommend today, based on expert opinion, will change as we learn more. And so changing recommendations are a good thing. It means that we're learning and that we can provide better recommendations so that people can make more informed decisions about their health. During COVID-19, CDC was shut off from the public. They weren't allowed to talk directly. And so you had politicians framing every new recommendation as a flip-flop, but it was framed as public health doesn't know what they're doing. And as with any new public health crisis, many of the things that you thought at the beginning will change, and your recommendations will change with that. There was no opportunity to bring the public along and maintain trust during that pandemic. I also think that one of the challenges with vaccines is that they impact your risk of getting a disease. And so, with the COVID vaccine, if you get the vaccine, you were far less likely to get severe COVID, to be hospitalized, or to die than if you didn't get the vaccine. But that doesn't mean that there weren't people who got the vaccine, who got sick, who got hospitalized and died. It was just a smaller percentage. So the measles vaccine is probably one of the best vaccines we have. It's about 95% effective. But that still means that 5% of people who get that vaccine could still get measles. And that's really, really challenging, especially in a pandemic situation where it whips through an entire community. If you, you know, that vaccine was, the mRNA vaccines were very effective and very safe. They were over 80% effective. But that means if 100 people got that vaccine, 20 people are still going to get COVID. And so that's a real challenge because it's the people who got the disease after a vaccine are going to be much more vocal about it than someone who got a vaccine and didn't get the disease. It's a real challenge in public health. It's one where I think journalists can play a role in trying to explain that challenging concept. It's one of the biggest problems with public health is when it's working really effectively, it's invisible. It's when these systems aren't there that you start to see, you know, people getting sick at a restaurant because it was never inspected, or people getting sick at a swimming pool because the water wasn't being monitored. But you don't hear about public health when people go to the pool and they don't get sick, or you go out for dinner and you don't get food poisoning, because those things shouldn't happen. So it's a real challenge for to maintain the investment in these systems that protect the community as a whole.
Restoring faith in vaccinations is likely to be a long process, Besser says.
I think that until people are seeing in their community diseases that were not around at all during their lifetime, it's going to be very hard to get the support that we need. You know, there are major efforts taking place around the country to remove the vaccination requirements for children going to school. To me, that is one of the most frightening ideas that I've seen in my lifetime. Because what it will mean is that if you're sending your child to kindergarten and you've decided to vaccinate, you don't know that they're not going to be sitting next to a child who is unvaccinated, who could potentially give them something quite serious and quite severe. As a global community, we have come very close to wiping polio off the face of the planet. The only disease that in humans that we have been successful at doing that for is smallpox. And there's a global effort to wipe out polio. That effort, I don't think is gonna be successful. And I think one of the big reasons it's not going to be successful is that here in the United States, we are backing away from the commitment to ensuring that every child in every community has access to the vaccines that can help protect their health. It's a very sad situation, but it's very, if you're a parent who's never seen polio, you know, doesn't really know much about what polio even is, and you have the person who is leading the advisory committee to the CDC saying, well, I don't think polio vaccine should be required. It should be a matter of choice. It can be really challenging as a parent to know, well, I don't even know what polio is. We don't have polio in America. Why should I even bother to give my child a vaccine that may make them fussy, give them a sore arm? I'm not going to go that route. But the idea that polio could come back to our country, it's just devastating. I visited a polio hospital in India and saw the outcome of what happens in communities that have not had the same access to vaccination. And it's debilitating. Each new vaccine that has protected our children, to me, was a miracle. And, you know, there were so many diseases that I saw when I was training as a pediatric resident in Baltimore, different types of meningitis that we just don't see any. But with the new vaccine recommendations from the ACIP, some of those diseases are going to be coming back.
Some members of the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices have said they believe mRNA vaccines are dangerous. But Besser says that narrative obscures the decades of work that went into developing vaccines based on mRNA.
The mRNA vaccines, I would assess as extremely safe. You know, the mRNA vaccines, the development of that technology occurred over about two decades. with federal dollars that were invested in universities around the country. And what we saw in 2020 with the arrival of the COVID pandemic, a new infectious agent, typically it would have taken 2 or 3 years to develop a safe and effective vaccine. Within about a year of this virus being identified, we had multiple safe and highly effective vaccines that were being made available in communities because of the investment in research and all the work that had been done to show that the technology worked and to see and make sure that it was safe. And that, because of that time, how short that time was, millions of lives were saved. This administration has decided that they are not going to support mRNA work, and the Secretary of Health canceled hundreds of millions of dollars in research. And this is research into approaches that could have provided new treatments for cancer, as well as approaches to infectious diseases. One of the beauties of the technology is how quickly you can use this approach to make vaccines against new diseases. And there was a lot of work going on to develop flu vaccines using mRNA technology. Because one of the challenges with the flu vaccine is that while I think people should get the vaccine, it's not as effective as a lot of vaccines, and you have to get it every year. So if you could come up with an approach to flu that was like measles, where you get one shot and you're good for the rest of your life, that would be an amazing thing in terms of protecting people's lives, reducing cost, and getting flu under control. But when you have an approach that says that the Secretary of Health has said that he's never seen what he would call a safe and effective vaccine, that's a very challenging situation.
As important as vaccines are, they also often involve government agencies, and that can be tough at a time when immigrants are facing threats from ICE and possibly having their information exploited by federal agents.
What we've seen in terms of immigration enforcement by ICE around the country, it has created a barrier for immigrants to get the health care that they need and deserve. And because it is not, it's not an unfounded concern about the possibility that ICE could be at a medical facility. And so around the country, what we're hearing about is a decline in people showing up for visits that they've had because of the concerns about what ICE might be doing. So the idea that vaccines should be all this shared decision making, it's hard enough for a documented immigrant to get a healthcare provider who speaks the same language and is culturally attuned. The idea that someone who's undocumented can access those services and have a shared decision-making conversation defies logic. I think that for many families, vaccines are given through public health clinics. And so it's worth finding out what the practices are in the clinic in your community to know that it's safe. I think it is for many of these infections, it is dangerous to have a child who is unvaccinated. And so you have to look to see what is available in your particular community, who some of the trusted voices are that you can turn to find out what the practices are at a given clinic. My understanding is that the federally qualified health centers, the community clinics in America, have not been collecting or sharing immigration information. But that doesn't mean that information isn't being accessed in ways that are not lawful.
That was Dr. Richard Besser, CEO of the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation and former acting director of the CDC. He was speaking with American Community Media about the vaccine landscape. For KBOO News In Depth, I'm Althea Billings.
listener-supported community radio, KBOO Portland.
Hello, KBOO supporters. It's tax season. To request a copy of your 2025 tax receipt, email membership at kboo.org